Yes, we are back. You've tuned into the Bellingham Podcast for the month of April, April 2024, episode 233. From the city by the Salish Sea, I'm AJ Barsay.
And straight out of 98226, I am Chris Powell. On this episode, we are going to take you on a sentimental journey. That's what the olds used to dance to when they used to cut a rug. AJ and I are going to be talking about nostalgia, pining for the past, wanting to go back to those halcyon days of youth. We are going to talk about many aspects about what you can do to relive some grand old times in some cases. Won't you join us? This is the Bellingham Podcast.
So does Maple Showers bring A flowers? How's that work, Chris?
It brings Mune flowers, like May and June.
Ah, there we go. How are we doing, Chris?
I'm rusty. It's been a while since we were on the stick, and I don't have my shtick together. Dear listener, you didn't realize that there's like four takes, we false starts that we had in starting this episode. We do one take pretty much with typically a couple of edits for all of my nasty rants that I go on that you have to edit out.
So trust me, folks. If we ever had a Patreon, man, you would want to pay for the rants that Chris, the tirades of Chris Powell.
Of course, it's not going to be $5 or $10 a month for that level in Patreon. That's going to be more like, you know, $50, $100 a month for getting our unfiltered takes on things. Anyway, AJ, what's going on for yourself?
Dude, part of our delay of last month was, man, my production schedule has never been so ratcheted. I did the math, and last month I was in 6 different recording productions.
You barely know which one you're doing with now. This is the Bellingham podcast, right?
That happened.
Yeah, this is the OG, the mothership, right?
Yeah, no, this is, thank you. This is my therapy session.
There,
hello, my 100,000 friends out there. A lot of things have been going on, and I'm going to recap some of the projects that led into it. But I was invited on to a flurry of Zulu Time podcasts with our friend and mate across the pond, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
At @timeless_moments on Instagram. And he was doing a series called Watches And. So Watches and Space, Watches and Water.
Watches and AJ.
Yeah. So we were doing that. And so I was on a few of those. And so we were pre-recording that because he was on deployment for
classified places.
Yes. Yeah, that type of thing. And so we got all those in the hopper and stuff. And then my production schedule for Made Under Pressure for the Deep Sea Magazine, that was full as well. I got to interview... On my top 12 artist list, like if I could have a beverage with a person and just talk photography or talk whatever their artistry is, I got a chance to have one of those conversations. On last month's episode of the Made Under Pressure podcast, I got to sit down with Christina Mittermeier, Mitty for short.
The Christina Mittermeier?
Yes.
Very cool.
And so it's a great episode. If you're not familiar with her work, she did a lot of photography back in the early days of even film photography, which dovetails great into today's topic. Working around the world with indigenous peoples and photographing indigenous communities and culture. She's an environmentalist. She's a scientist. She's a diver. But more recently, many people probably know her work with wildlife. She's a Nat Geo contributing photographer. I mean, I could go on. Like, the list of her titles is like long and distinguished, Chris.
Yes.
But she's just so cool to talk to. Like,
absolutely.
It was the best hour I've had in a long time where I'm just like, wow.
And now you got to put up with us, me and the voices in my head on the Bellingham podcast.
No. Like I said, we're all good friends here.
That's
on the Analog Explorer and on Made Under Pressure podcast.
Where can people find Made Under Pressure if they want to stalk you?
Yeah, so we're on all of the platforms that you find Bellingham podcast, not over terrestrial radio. They're cool, but they're not as cool as us, Chris.
We'll see how 2024 plays out.
Right, because, you know, the Bellingham podcast is on Camry.
88.3. That's right.
It's the place to be, the Sealy by the Salish Sea.
I told you I was rusty, and it's like, I'm going back to 2021.
Ouch.
Yes, KMRE is kind enough to play our show on Saturdays, and we are very thankful for that. And so if you are in the Bellingham terrestrial radio area, give them a buzz there on 88.3 or KMRE.org if you are anywhere else around the world, to be able to listen to our show there.
Right. And if you've ever wondered why we do that shtick, and because we say we don't have sponsors, one, we like KMRE, but two, also because of FCC guidelines, we have to do an actual station call. And so we do that to help the show. We have a lot of new listeners and stuff. So that shtick is that's why that's
yes.
There.
And, you know, in Bellingham, they are the goods. They are on our goods list for a radio station to be listening to.
Yep. And so that dovetail, so all of that, so all of that's going on at the same time that also I've got my wife graduating very soon after 4 years. She's going to be graduating with her master's. So we got.
I foresee a show in June that goes along the same lines because I got a kiddo.
Yeah.
The heir to my estate.
Heiress. Heiress. Heiress,
pardon me. You watch your mouth there, mister. We want to keep it clean. our little, who's not as little anymore. Actually, AJ, right now, right at the time of this recording.
Breaking news.
Our beautiful and an intelligent and amazing daughter is taking, who's in her first year of law school at the same time as the fourth year of undergrad, political science, about to graduate with a degree.
Go, Shrimpy, go.
A final consists of one question, 1,200 words written in an open note from all of the cumulative studies, cases, et cetera, et cetera. You get your entire grade for a semester on one exam, one question, and if you have horrible handwriting, illegible handwriting like me, might as well just kiss it goodbye.
Yeah.
But she is currently writing out case after case reference and formatting and building the argument. So this is the finals for a number. But in a little while, we're going to be celebrating a Bachelor of Arts degree with our heiress to our throne.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah. So June will be interesting.
Yes.
And then, but wait, there's more. So the, because I don't know how I have time for all this stuff. So about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I got brought into a conversation with our friend Dan over in the UK.
Hi, Dan.
And a few other of us in the, hey, Dan. We're enthusiasts in watches and history and such. And there's this really great company out of Australia called Basel. And they make... they make watches, but they have a unique twist to them. They have an exhibition, you know, you've seen exhibition case backs, like the back of a watch.
Yes.
So you can see the movement, right? Uh-huh. They have like an exhibition crown. So this crown, I call it the hollow point crown.
Okay.
Because it's literally a hollow point and it has a piece of like glass and you can see things in it. And originally it was created so that because the founder and owner and CEO, Christoph, you know, he immigrated to Australia. And so trying to create a brand and be connected to Australian stuff and the Australian way of life and lifestyle, there's like pieces and elements of Australia in it. So like sand or dirt or they also had a contract with like the Australian Armed Forces. So there's also some stuff there as well. So we all kind of got together on a call and a group was formed to create what would be an 80th D-Day commemorative watch.
D-Day of World War II.
D-Day of World War II.
All right.
So, you know, the Google it, kids. So the beaches of Normandy.
Yes.
And so being at an 80th anniversary, it's a big deal. And we wanted to create something collaboratively that would be authentic to the time, but also respect the fact that Basel is a new brand. They weren't there during World War II, where a lot of the watch companies right now are doing reissues. They're doing like what's called the Dirty Dozen watches, these iconic watches. If you Google World War II military watch, it's a black dial with Arabic numerals, and it's a specific style.
But this is a commemorative timepiece, sounds like.
Right, and so what we wanted to do was what if? So what if this was a watch that was to be issued back then, but using today's manufacturing.
All right.
So a nod to the past. And so with a lot of research, we came up with what's called the Langstone Field Watch. And what it is that it's honoring the clandestine missions of the English kayakers that would go out to survey what would be the landing points of Normandy. They're called the COPP, C-O-P-P, which is Combined Ops Assault Pilot Parties. And Dan's probably cringing because I've always had a hard time remembering which letters go where.
Dan's got grace for you. Don't worry. As do we, AJ. Continue.
Yeah. So what's cool about this is that the crown will have sand of Sword Beach in it. And so it's a kind of a cool nod because, again, this is a company that's new, but combining a bit of the past with present manufacturing and still bringing a way of honoring. There's going to be an episode on the Zulu Time podcast as well as Analog Explorer going more in depth about this watch, but you know, it's got blued hands. It doesn't have a black dial, it has a white dial, and there's a reason why. That is a historical nod to a different style of watch that was issued back then. And then the hands that are blued are they're actually going to be traditionally blued hands. They're not chemically done. So there's a lot of touch points on it. The pre-order, you can actually sign up to get notified. At the time of this recording, if you are interested in it, you can check it out on bausele.com, BAUSELE.com. No, this is not a sponsor. Just this was a project I was on. And you can get notified when it drops. And I can tell you there's a few spots left. So at the time of this recording, it's $700 USD.
All right.
For all of that I said on a sesame seed bun.
There you go.
Mechanical movement.
And you get to yep. be wearing a story on your wrist.
Yes. We definitely tried to craft a story with that.
Very cool. It sounds like you were feeling a little nostalgic about World War II and the commemoration of Normandy.
A little bit. So with that, it dovetails into our episode very nicely, and that is nostalgia. Now, if you go on to the gram or the Tiki Talk or whatever the kids are doing these days, nostalgia as a marketing tactic is running rampant. I mean, the fact that there's generational wars, I'll call it, going on right now, where the Gen Xers, I'm looking at you, Chris, are looking at us millennials and elder millennials of getting off my lawn.
With our stink eye. It's like, stop that. I wish you wouldn't do that, youngin.
Meanwhile, we're all looking at Gen Z and like, what are you all doing? And then we look at Gen Alpha, the youngsters, and they're like, whoa, they're feral. And then I just found it interesting.
But we are all happy that all generations are listening to the Bellingham podcast. Make no mistake.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. So what I wanted to do is bring back resuscitate a shtick that we did back in the
no CPR
days.
On this one. We're not resuscitating something, but yeah,
Claire!
Bring it back.
So the word of note today is going to be nostalgia or nostalgist, a person who is fond of nostalgia. Now, Chris, you took the lead on this one. Do you want to give me the etymology of the word nostalgia?
Sure. There's a website called Etymonline. Look it up if you want, kiddos. Nostalgic originally started in the year 1726, which I think was like what, last Tuesday in some cases?
Wednesday.
Right. It is a morbid longing to return to one's home or native country, severe homesickness considered as a disease. That's a different approach than the dictionary definition of nostalgia.
Yeah. So the dictionary, according to good old Merriam-Webster, it's a wistful or excessively sentimental yearning to return to or of a past period or irrevocable condition. So both looking at the etymology as well as the Merriam-Webster definition of it. And homesickness is a result of it, which I find interesting.
Mm.
Because when you look at the marketing tactics, homesickness isn't really what's being sold. It's really a thing or, again, something that evokes or elicits a response out of you. Now, place is part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But really, like, going back to a different time. Now, here's the other thing that I find interesting is, and I've got links in the show notes about this, because it dovetails into my last project update, and that is, at the time of this recording, in about 2 or so weeks, I'll be riding in the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride.
The DGR. How long have you been doing that? I think this is, you started around the time we did the...
I think this is my 9th year.
Yeah.
I've only missed one. I even rode during the pandemic. We did Ride Together Solo. That was that time.
Right.
But last year, as I was getting my bike all together, I ran into a mechanical issue, blew out some oil. And so I had to not ride last year. But this year I'll be riding in Port Angeles.
Oh, my home, growing up stomping grounds.
A new chapter of the gentry was formed out there.
Yes.
And it's close to, you know, my folks and stuff. So I figure I'll be riding with them and get to know them. If you're interested in sponsoring me, I'll have a link in the show notes. The proceeds go to the Movember Foundation and supporting the DGR in the worldwide efforts.
And the Movember Foundation, for those who aren't aware of it.
Yeah. So the DGR and Movember partnered so that they can raise awareness of men's mental health and prostate cancer awareness. There's a lot that goes into that, and I'll have links in the show notes for it. But yes, that's my folks in the DGR.
And if you don't get anything from this podcast, just keep this in mind. Get this takeaway from you. AJ's a busy hombre. If you can't tell by now, let's talk about the yearnings for the days of youth.
So the reason why I want to dovetail the mental health part is, you know, you and I have talked about, like, in around the Christmas episodes that we usually do, that, sentimentality and nostalgia around the holidays leads to, either for some people, you know, over the moon happiness, but also a higher rate of depression.
Sure. The winter blahs in the Northern Hemisphere.
Right. And what's interesting is nostalgia has a double-edged sword with that as well. There's actually been some research in that. But the positive, because this is the Belly Amp podcast, I want to focus on the positive side and nostalgia. So there is research. You'll love this, Chris. Quote, still listen to the same music that you enjoyed as a teen? We have good news for your brain.
I need some good news in my life.
So according to NIH, there's actually been research that shows that if you go and you throw out and listen to, I don't know, the death metal that you listened to. What did you listen to back in the day, Chris?
Back in the day, let's take the mid to late 80s, which was my formative years. It was pretty much MTV's Headbangers Ball.
Yeah.
And that would have either hair metal, glam rock, or hard rock. It went from Poison to Guns N' Roses, and then it kind of blew out from there. But yeah, I'm listening to Dokken, Whitesnake, Aerosmith, all of the, and a lot of obscure bands that we don't have time to talk about. Contact me if you want to know about some other really cool bands that you may not be aware of that are really rocking.
But when you listen to it, how do you feel? What does it evoke for you?
It evokes an indescribable feeling of somewhat of a tingliness, because everything was new and I'm discovering things about the world and myself, while I have loud screeching guitars, distorted, thank you very much, double bass drums, and shrieking vocals of a 3-octave voice range, unlike mine, which is in the lower registers. I could probably play death metal if I wanted to. But to go back to that was like, this is all new and fresh and exciting. And unfortunately, now that there's a 5 in the first part of my digits in my age, I kind of know stuff about life, having gone through a whole lot of lumps and life experiences. To go back to those days of innocence, if I can butcher an Enigma reference, it's a return to innocence. And that's not rock. That's a different kind of music, which I listened to growing up as well. But they invoke an emotional reaction for me because everything was new and exciting. And what's exciting nowadays, other than breaking news, few and far between for an old guy like me.
Right. But the thing is that you fall in line with a lot of the research. So,
of course I do. I'm one of the statistics, yo.
Outside of the NIH posting about this, there's also been, you might have seen it on TikTok or Instagram, there's this therapist based out of California. I think her name was Nikki Roy. And she talks about the fact that when we are teens, and we listen to that music, our brain actually fuses differently. It actually, the actual synapses of like our emotions, and obviously during that chemical change that we are as a teen, it does something different to us. And that's why we always go back to our roots of music in that era.
I think for my brain waves, those synapses fused in the form of a rock cymbal, the devil horns, if you will.
Oh, Chris, no. You need two hands. You're so awesome. You have to have two hands of rock.
Yeah, what AJ's doing right there from that sound that you can't see, yet we're looking at each other doing it. Two hands put together with pinkies up. So anyway, moving on.
So anyway, I was interested when I saw that, because anything I see on social media, I always have the eye of Sauron. I'm just like, is this real? Because my day job in AI. So I did some digging, and I actually found out that she was indeed referencing some very good and interesting material. It's actually not breaking news. It was done in 2016 by Frederick Barrett and Peter Janta. Sorry if I mess up names. And the article of study is called Neural Responses of Nostalgia Evoking Music Modeled by Elements of Dynamic Musical Structure and Individual Differences in Affective Traits.
Sounds like Motorhead.
Sounds like Motorhead.
Or Motley Crue, one or the other.
So in it, like, they talk about their findings and stuff. But because, again, I went hardcore nerd on this, I have all the links. So like, if you ever came across that and you wanted to kind of either understand it or debunk it, I've actually got the links to it, which is the primer for this show, because we're going to talk about the things that you and I go and turn to when we need to have that wistful longing of going back.
Oftentimes it comes without warning.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be walking around in public and I will be walking past people and there's going to be a scent. I'm very olfactory minded sensitive, if you will. I can sense scents around me. It's a sense. But when I smell a perfume, and by the way, for those of you who identify as a female and you have a nice fragrance that you wear, that's a wonderful thing. We want to work on not taking that fragrance and turning it into a weapon.
Yes.
With the amount of quantity that is sprayed. Anyway, move for that. But I will be walking past someone and there's a scent and I actually stop in my tracks and I'm like turning around. Nope, not because of the person's exterior. It's the scent. It's not like that meme where the dude's looking at that. Yeah, no, it's not like that. But that will take me back to high school because as I'm growing up in a small town near Port Angeles called Squim, there were some girls that were experimenting with perfume. And when you get crushes on those girls in high school, you associate those scents with those feelings of excitement, if you know what I'm saying. and then there's also the counter to that. On the other side of the fragrance spectrum, I'm walking in a grocery store or something, and I get a scent that makes me, yeah, I think I can make this not safe for work. It makes me vomit in my mouth.
Yeah.
Because someone identifying as a male, a gentleman, decides to put way too much Drakkar Noir or way too much Obsession for Men because they had that as their cologne when they were in high school and they carried it through and they figure, hey, chicks dig how I smell. I'm going to keep that up even though I'm in my 60s. Guys, cut it. I get that whiff and I'm like, oh, I'm now smelling every guy in college I was in a class with in the 90s. Public service announcement. Let's reevaluate what we are stanking like out there. So yeah, I get nostalgic in some fragrances and bad nostalgia in others.
We did not prepare that. That was
of course
the
not.
Best rant. So you would fall in line, but I didn't have that research. But as I understand it, in cognitive development, olfactory memory is actually our strongest memory.
That's why mine's like Popeye. I got an olfactory memory.
But it's interesting to see, like, to hear that because you're a Gen Xer.
Yes, I'm tail end. Yeah.
Yep, and I'm an elder millennial, so an early Gen Yer.
Sure.
Okay, and it's interesting because, like, for me. Similar. I don't have anything on the lady side of scents, but on the guy side, Axe body spray. Anytime I smell that, immediately I'm just like,
you get violent.
Seventh grade locker room, and I need to run.
were you not one of the cool cats?
No, heck no.
Yeah. You see what kind of reaction it gets?
Heck no.
Yeah, and once again, you know, you cook bacon in the morning and your family, rises from sleep and they smell bacon and they know something good's going to happen that morning. Yeah. You fresh brewed coffee, especially the kind you make.
Oh yeah.
It smells good. Motor oil for some who like working on cars, nail polish or nail polish remover, as potent as that might smell for others, some have really good memories of being in slumber parties, giggle fests, if you will, as they are doing each other's nails, and that is associated with it. So it goes in many different directions. Dear listener, thanks for sticking with us, by the way. What scents trigger those nostalgic days of youth memories for you? It's an interesting thought exercise for you to consider as you're either speeding on the road. And by the way, slow down.
Slow down, please.
You don't want to get pulled over.
Oh, there's that speed trap.
Exactly, right there. Check out Waze. They got the thing posted. Or as you're contemplating, like, what would take me back to a time when I was, when things were young, fresh, and exciting?
Yeah. So, and it's interesting because, like, as you and I are riffing off this, the funny thing is that, again, the whole primer of this came out of the fact that marketing nostalgia, as we just said, is a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. So where you are seeing something and an algorithm is feeding it to you, you're already seeing the good times. Think that when you're looking at that before you click on something, because you're just feeding the algorithm of like, oh, I know that you're of this generation. Oh, you like this. Just think about that when you're dealing with social media, is that, you know, you have those memories. People are starting to understand, algorithms starting to understand that they know that you know that you have those memories.
I've had this little trend of weirdness in my content consumption. There have been in the past, let's just say 10 years.
Yeah.
There have been some television shows, series, if you will, that go back in time. And it's not like Back to the Future. That's a whole different concept. But a period-based drama.
Yes.
And a show that came to mind as I'm listening to you talk is called Halt and Catch Fire. This was a show on AMC.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And this is a show that pretty much is based in 1980, 81, at the start of the personal computing era.
Yep.
And what the dynamics were like for computer programmers and how it was getting into the market. Oh, by the way, there seemed to be a show recently within the past 5 years that a lot of people watched on television that had a whole lot of 80s tropes and themes. It was called Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And a lot of the soundtrack you might be hearing is what could be considered synthwave, which is a type of musical genre. No, it's not death metal, and no, it's not something you do when you say goodbye to your synthesizer. 80s synthwave is using components such as the 1980s synthesizers and the music and the non-live drums, the programmed drums, to create this type of music that was very popular back when technology wasn't huge, when you can compose a Grammy-winning album on your MacBook laptop or something else like that. That is why when I, after a few years, when I heard this song that contained a bunch of 80s elements, if you analyze it from a musical standpoint, I freaked out and listened to it about 8 or 9 times over and over again. Yeah, it's The Weeknd's Blinding Lights.
Yeah.
And I'm like, where did this come from? Oh, it's all of the components. And it brought me back to my days of middle school dances where I had no game.
Yeah.
And I'm like looking at people dancing, and it's a similar kind of things, except I'm not getting beat up by a couple Las Vegas gangsters and floating to some lounge singer. That's a different kind of thing.
Wait, that didn't happen to you?
No, that's in the video for Blinding Lights. Actually, that was in college when that happened to me.
There we go. That's Blinding Lights.
Well, that's where The Weeknd got the inspiration for the video from me. So as this all in television has these throwback things. Halt and Catch Fire is one. There's a British show called Life on Mars. Inspector of a police detective is hit by a car in modern 2006, if you will, Britain, London, and Manchester, and is transported. He wakes up and is back in 1973. The world is 1973, but it's a period-based drama where you're in a coma. And then the follow-up episode, Ashes to Ashes, is this another detective who gets shot and is in the same area in the 1980s, and all of the clothing, all of the music, all of the buildings and the cultural isms were there. It's really fascinating. I'm a fan of it.
So that dovetails into the next topic at hand, and that is, like, you know, look at all the reboots that are happening. The one that I kind of squeed just a little bit, Beetlejuice is being redone.
Oh, really?
But I mean, they have all the original cast basically in it.
Is Channing Tatum going to be Beetlejuice's?
Keaton's back as Beetlejuice.
Okay, that's great.
No, but again, like the fact that you and I can have that conversation across our generations, as it were. But like again, like I say that, and it makes me. I'm not eager to go see the film. I'm just excited the fact that they're doing it, because I can think back to when I was a teenager
and watched
the Sandworms, the whole 9 yards, the Book of the Dead, like the whole nine, Book of the Living, like that whole thing. And it's interesting that, again, it's a tactic that works, but at the same time, it makes me wonder, like, you know, is it feeding into FOMO, right? Like,
yes.
There's another thing that came back as a limited drop, and they were doing the whole FOMO thing. Back in my generation, the bright neon colors of late 80s, early 90s, Gecko brand.
The surfwear style, yep.
Yep, and so I had a ton of Gecko stuff. Gecko came back, and I mean, they're like, the advertisement looked straight off of an old VHS tape, whole 9 yards. And again, it made me think back of like my third, fourth grade, where I used to have, you know, Gecko stuff. And I looked to my wife, who's 5 years my junior, and I go, you know, she didn't quite get it. She vaguely remembers that because her brother, who's my age, had that type of stuff, but she didn't have that connection. But I looked at her and I go, I swear to God, like if they bring back Hypercolor, I'm going to lose my stuff just a little bit. But at the same time, I'm going to eye roll. And not but like 4 or 5 months later, I saw that Hypercolor came back.
Because the algorithm heard you
and threw
that in your feed.
Apparently. But no, but again, it's a marketing strategy and such. But there's kind of the darker side of this as well. Like if you look at video gaming. So video games right now, like if you are a classic video gamist like myself, you know, yes, I've got a closet of everything going back to the Atari 2600.
Great Scott, AJ, we have to go to the future with a second part of this podcast because it's going too long. We need to get the 8.20, what's a gigawatt amount?
We're just to get jiggy with it, gigawatts.
No, that's a 90, that's not a Back to the Future, that's Will Smith. We should do a part two about this. We should go ahead into the future with a second part to this conversation we're currently having. So why don't we do that?
that wraps it up for this 233rd edition of the Bellingham Podcast. Thank you again so much for listening to us, rating us, reviewing us, wherever you like to get this podcast. Remember, if you are in the Bellingham area, don't smash that bell, but do listen to us on KMRE 88.3.
It's a place to be by the city, by the Salish Sea, and don't smash that ham along with smashing that bell in Bellingham.
Oh, Bellingham. That's for Warner Brothers.
Bad joke.
Bad. Wrap it up. Okay. From the city by the Salish Sea, and there is no Acme Anvils here. I'm AJ Barce.
And I'm Chris Powell. That's all, folks.